Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining in, and I am thrilled to have a very interesting topic today, one that we have moved from adoption to kind of heading toward mainstream newness in the healthcare field. And our topic today is telemedicine. Just the word of that brings some thoughts to mind, like audio video conferencing, which certainly was a piece of telemedicine, but we have actually moved light years beyond that with the technologies we have today. And I'm thrilled to have one of the largest telemedicine providers in the United States in her field today with me, Dr. Ann Patterson. And let me introduce her. Dr. Patterson is a Georgia girl. She's very interesting in that she actually worked for NASA and was a rocket scientist and actually did a medical mission and got involved in the medicine and went back to medical school, where she specialized in OBGYN and ultimately maternal fetal medicine, which deals with high-risk pregnancy management. She got her medical degree at Emory, did her residency and her fellowship at Emory, and has served for over 25 years on staff at Northside Hospital taking care of patients. So welcome, Dr. Patterson.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about what is telemedicine and how did you get involved with that from doing a private clinical practice? You've actually made quite a switch. So tell us a little bit about that journey for you.
Well, I did sell a practice and decided I wanted to do something different. And in Georgia, it was very obvious from my previous experience and having patients transferred into me that areas in rural Georgia were very short on health care in some areas. There are actually about 40 counties in the state that do not even have obstetrics and gynecology.
And I know from our past working together on some projects that infant mortality and morbidity, Georgia's performance is some of the lowest in the nation.
Yes, it is. We unfortunately do rank in the 40s. We have improved, but I think we're still 41st and 43rd in low birth weight and preterm babies. So obviously we have some work to do.
We have a ways to go. So let's talk a little bit about how did you use telemedicine in your private practice at Northside?
Not at all. In fact, I had a very, very brief experience with telemedicine when I was with NASA, and one of the satellites that I had worked on used a remote hookup to remote areas in the Rocky Mountain area to try to get health care to mid-level providers when there were no other health care there. Needless to say, the equipment and the hookups and all were very primitive in comparison to what we have today. So I was actually a guest at Emory Genetics, and I was introduced to truly some of the state-of-the-art equipment. It was initially being built down near Tech, and they were looking at using all the right components from different people, putting it together here locally, and it was absolutely amazing. And you could see real-time, be with a patient just like you were across the room. You could look at a high-resolution scan just like you were there in the room doing the scan. And I knew this is exactly what I wanted to do to try to help bring health care to rural Georgia and other parts of the country that needed help.
Very good. So just your technology background you were very comfortable with, and then you saw the new application for your very scarce specialty. And for the listeners that don't know, Dr. Patterson's specialty of maternal fetal medicine graduates only about 60 to 70 fellows per year. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So we have less than 1,500 of you in the United States. So hence we have an unequal distribution of specialists to the need in terms of high-risk pregnancy management.
Yes, we are clustered in big cities or at big medical centers. And if someone is 3 or 4 hours away, they have to travel 3 or 4 hours to get here to be seen. And then the decisions to be made may entail more travel or staying away from their community. Yeah. Telemedicine isn't for everyone, but about 80 to 90% of the patients that we see by telemedicine can stay in their local communities, even if they have to have something else done. And that's really pretty exciting. So people don't have to travel multiple times, long distances, to get health care that can be administered locally.
Right. So some of the benefits of using telemedicine technology, one would be access where typically there is none, like your rural areas.
And correct.
You span across the state, correct?
Yes.
So you have offices in South Georgia, like kind of where are you?
Well, several different parts of the state, and recently have started working with the state and a health department, and hopefully those will expand so that not every health department would need this, but the health districts that do, we will try to work with the state to provide that.
Very good. So we'll go a little into your specialty a little later, but I'd like to backtrack and talk a little bit about just how telemedicine works. At the opening of the show, I said when I first learned about telemedicine, to me it kind of sounded like Skyping. But I know you integrate ultrasound and teleradiology and Bluetooth technology. So my understanding is there's three big components of telemedicine. One would be some kind of transmission network, which could be either cellular or satellite or a broadband network. And another component would be the hardware that needs to be something with the patient and you on your end, and then there needs to be the provider. Is that correct?
That is right.
So let's talk a little bit about each of those three. What kind of transmission? How do you transmit?
Well, there are different ways, but in the state, and Georgia is very, very fortunate about this, there is a Georgia Partnership for Telehealth is a network that was established by the then Commissioner of Insurance, John Oxendine. And he really was very visionary that this would be a very advantageous thing for the state of Georgia and put this in place. And it has functioned as a not-for-profit organization providing 24/7 a network so that you can be up and running and see a patient at any time. And it has been utilized by different specialties in different ways. For instance, telestroke is something that's widely used in Georgia in different emergency rooms so that if a patient is seen in a remote community, has had a stroke, they can connect with someone who is an expert, a neurologist on this, and get the right advice about what to do to minimize the disabilities that strokes can cause. So that's another way that telemedicine works, but it's something that's available in the state.
Right. So most commonly, you don't have to be the IT department. You can utilize another provider's broadband network, and so the barrier to entry is pretty low.
Right.
Okay,
and
as far Georgia, as IT support.
Correct. And Georgia is a leader in this in the nation, which is really great.
Okay. So probably one of the things as telemedicine expands is rural areas that don't have broadband coverage, they're going to have to overcome that hurdle before they beef up their telemedicine programs.
That is right. Okay. And that is available to them.
Okay. And have you ever, you mentioned earlier that you had once tried satellite transmission. Have you tried that not long ago, but recently? Have you ever tried that?
Yes, we have. We've actually done this two times, one from Central America and one from Bangladesh. And both actually worked quite well. So
what happened? How did you get a patient in India?
Well, I was asked to evaluate a patient for the Minister of Health in Bangladesh for an ultrasound. And we did this as a demonstration to him to show
like
what
proof,
is available.
Proof of concept kind
right,
of thing?
That this could be accomplished. And it was an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm. So were you able to connect?
We were able to connect. We were able to see the patient. We were able to see the ultrasound. And we could see it in a timely fashion.
Okay,
and
so global really isn't out of the question either.
No, it's not.
This is a different way to connect. Okay, so that talks a little bit about types of transmission. So the second leg of the stool we kind of talked about was the hardware required. So is this just like on a laptop? Is this a unit? Or talk a little bit about a telemedicine, what's needed.
Overall, it's a unit. You want the best is an integrated unit where you can have a high-resolution camera that can the patient can see you with, and you on the other side can see the patient. The computers involved in it can be utilized for electronic medical record as needed. Not only that, there's good voice. There are stethoscopes that can be put on the patient that you can hear.
So I could be in Jackson, Georgia, and you could hear me here in Atlanta?
Absolutely. And the stethoscopes are so sensitive and so precise that it's just like you were there. They have cameras where you can actually evaluate the inner ear that's an otoscope that's...
Oh, wow. So you could put a light camera in my ear and see?
Yes.
Same as if you were there in person?
Absolutely. And actually, the picture's blown up. Dermatology. You can look at a dermatologic lesion, and very precisely.
So is there identical units from what you have to wherever the patient is? The patients have to go somewhere where there's a unit around them.
Right. Not every unit's identical. Often the specialty or the doctors that are providing the care will recommend or require certain things to be on a unit mm-hmm. or a cart, as it's often called. And those are then configured as you need them.
Mm-hmm. And so you, each specialty, like a telestroke, might have different ancillary plugins than your specialty or behavioral health or something like that.
It could. It could have less. It could have more, depending on what you need. Obviously, I don't do dermatology.
Okay.
It's not that I don't ever get asked to look at the patient's skin, but the likelihood that I would need that kind of resolution for the skin is low. I do have a high-resolution camera just because I think it's important because you never know what you're going to expect in my specialty.
Yeah. So I read a little bit that one of the hindrances to telemedicine expanding is actually adoption from the patient and the provider getting used to how to work this stuff. So I know you, as an engineer, you're probably more comfortable with technology than some of the other physicians, having worked with EMRs and ultrasound technology. But how hard was this for you to learn, and how'd you do that?
For me, not hard. Getting the people on the other side comfortable, if they've never been exposed to a lot of technology, sometimes takes a little time. I've actually had a harder time getting patients, not patients, but getting the mid-level providers that are going to be the other part of my care comfortable with what they're doing and the equipment more than the patient. The patients, I've only had maybe two or three over a couple of year span that you go in and they look and go, oh my gosh, I'm on TV.
And I remember you telling me a story one time where the patient came on and her eyes were like saucers and she said, can she hear me? Can she see me? And you said, yes, I'm right here. Yeah. So they get used to it. But you did bring up a good point in that the patient's not in a room by themselves in front of a unit. They actually need a provider, a medical assistant. Who's with the patient?
Well, you have a presenter, and okay. the presenter can be a mid-level provider, and they can guide the physical exam if you like and or help facilitate any questions or you know,
position
evaluations
the camera, that help answer questions. So it's very similar to an in-person visit. The patient comes in, they do vital signs, whether they are at an emergency room, a health department, a doctor's office, or wherever has the telemedicine unit, and then they're put in a space. It's just they're sitting in front of the telemedicine cart.
Correct.
But still with some medical personnel there to assist.
Right. And they may be on the ultrasound table, and we're looking at a high-resolution scan. We can still see the patient. We just split the screen.
Okay, so you also use teleradiology where the patient is actually being scanned in one location, like Bangladesh, and
right.
you can actually see them real time.
Correct.
Is there any kind of lag or delay? Or right. is it like, does it look funny or does it kind of move slow? Or what does the image look like?
Depends on what the transmission, how you're being transmitted. But locally in Georgia, there is really no lag time. You
okay.
can see just like you were there.
Okay, so with this distance, I know a lot of listeners out there are going to think, oh my gosh, my ultrasounds are heading into the ethers for anybody to grab. Talk about privacy here.
Well, it's no different from it being in your doctor's office. Everything is HIPAA compliant that we see, and there's nothing transmitted that anybody could get that isn't secure as part of your medical record.
Okay, so it's all encrypted and
so,
same as EMR standards or the government standards in telemedicine.
Yes, maybe even more tightly.
Okay, well, that's hard to believe. Anyways, that's good. Okay, so let's go back to some of the benefits of telemedicine. Certainly access to specialists for the patients is one. Convenience for the patients is one. What about if they, what if, you mentioned not every, about 80 or 90% of patients are candidates for telemedicine, but what if you see them and they actually have to have human touch and hands-on in a procedure? Do you expedite that transition in any way?
Yes, we can. Say a patient needs to be seen immediately at a level 3 center where she needs to be delivered or something like that, then we can try to expedite that, whether she comes by ambulance or she's airlifted in.
So you'll coordinate with whoever, wherever she's going to be admitted or whoever has the facility that has the hands-on.
Correct.
Okay, so it probably makes it faster and more seamless, I'm guessing. Okay, and then another big question I have is cost. So it sounds like with all of this technology, wow, I'm really going to pay for that. So who pays for telemedicine? And is it different than if I just came to see you as a patient?
No, not at all. It is billed just exactly like you were present. In Georgia, you can bill the insurance or Medicaid just like you were there, and it pays exactly like you were a patient in the room with a doctor there, because you are the doctor there.
Yeah, so you said in Georgia. So is reimbursement state by state?
It is in many areas, state by state, depending on the state laws. Georgia, once again, has been very open, which is huge.
Okay, so since I'm guessing a lot of these patients that you see come from rural areas, maybe are higher Medicaid than what we might see here in the city, they actually would still be reimbursed as if you were there from the Medicaid carriers.
Correct.
And then does private insurance also kind of follow suit, or do they pay differently?
No, they pay almost
just
identical.
The same.
Yes.
They pay almost the same.
Correct.
Okay, so really check into your state to see what the telemedicine laws are, what the support is, and what the reimbursement is on the Medicaid programs. But that's really pretty exciting that you have this access to technology at a Medicaid level, because it sounds like it'd be reserved for those with money.
Right. Well,
so
it's not.
It's not. So that's very encouraging. It's getting to the right people. Let's talk a little bit about some of the limitations of telemedicine. So we alluded to one, nothing can kind of replace human touch, right? So if it's a procedure that requires a physician, that's something that you can't do. They'd actually have to go somewhere to get the procedure done.
Or you work with the local providers to be able to do that procedure.
Right. And then we talked about another limitation would be reimbursement, because some states have reimbursement and others have legislation or in process or don't have it yet. So it's growing in the United States.
Correct.
What about licensure and telemedicine? Are there licensure rules? Can you see a patient in North Dakota?
I just have to have a medical license in whatever state I'm practicing. So every state is different. It's different about licensure. Mm-hmm. So you have to go through whatever their mm-hmm. process is. Sometimes that's pretty involved.
Mm-hmm. So it's you have to be licensed where the patient's sitting.
Correct.
Right. And then so probably contiguous state. Are you licensed here in Georgia and any other states?
In Florida.
Okay. So really you could go across the state lines as long as you had a license where the patient was.
Correct.
Okay. Is there any trend nationally to get some kind of, seems like the people that would need it the most, you don't have the doctors there to begin with. So there'd be a big push to get national licensure for this kind of work.
The American Telemedicine Association is trying to do that. I'm sure it's a long involved process because, as we all know, the states like to have their autonomy.
Right. What about technology glitches? Since you're kind of dependent upon broadband and the internet, have you ever had times where you're just down, or what is your uptime, or how much of a problem is that or isn't that?
Well, there's always going to be something, but it's been minimal. And the network here in Georgia has someone, as I said, 24/7 to troubleshoot it. And if we've been down, it's been for a very minimal amount of time. Not hours, we're talking in the terms of minutes.
So the fact that you don't have to manage all that as a provider on the service side is a big plus.
Oh, absolutely. That's
right.
Huge.
Okay. All right. And so do you do urgent telemedicine visits?
Or
are they all scheduled?
It can be either way.
It can be either way. So really, that opens up instant access for patients really in trouble that wouldn't even have time to be transported.
Right. And to that end, I have a laptop that was configured for me that I travel with or have at home. And so if I get a phone call at some odd hour of the morning to, could I look at a patient? I can.
Very good. Now, before we get into your specialty, a lot of the buzz right now in healthcare has to do with the Affordable Care Act. So since that's looking for cost-effective ways and better access, and we're kind of in healthcare reform, how does the Affordable Care Act affect telemedicine? Is it speeding it up? The adoption of telemedicine, or is it just one more thing we're going to have to get through?
I think it may speed it up. I certainly think that the American Telemedicine Association is trying to use that as a vehicle to help it. I think time will tell.
Okay, very good. All right, now I want to hear a little bit about, I think we've covered most everything about how you work with telemedicine. Would you agree?
Pretty much.
Okay, so I want to hear about your particular specialty. So how do you apply telemedicine to high-risk obstetric care?
Well, first, maternal fetal medicine evaluates and treats patients who are pregnant for any type of a problem or abnormality during pregnancy, and the baby for any problem or abnormality they have prior to delivery. So To that end, we see a lot of ultrasound. We look at the baby often, and we certainly evaluate maternal patients who have medical problems, sometimes surgical problems, although surgical problems can be sometimes more immediately needing attention. So I may not as telemedicine as often as I would locally.
So for you, your practice has probably been very different. So where you used to have an office where patients would come to you, what's your schedule like? How's that work? You see Jackson, Georgia for a half hour and then dial into Toccoa? How does that work for you?
Well, what happens is there is a universal schedule.
Okay.
It's kept, there are two components to it, but my office keeps me a schedule for me. Mm-hmm. And I know how I'm scheduled, where the patient's going to come from. And usually the presenter knows what time, and I get a message, are you ready? And I hit yes, and they call right in.
Okay, so you'll be in front of your telemedicine unit, and do most of your referrals come from the rural obstetricians or from hospitals, or where are they coming from?
Mostly from rural obstetricians.
Okay, so that could be really anywhere, in the community sector, in private practice, at the hospital.
Correct.
Kind of a little bit of anywhere. Anywhere that there's a need for high-risk pregnancy, either mom or baby intervention, and there's no specialist of you there, they could potentially be called into you if they were connected on your system there.
That is correct.
They had the ability to connect in. Do you ever have circumstances, since you deal with pregnancies, that you have to interface with children's hospitals for things like fetal abnormalities? Because I know in your practice before, there's some, before the baby's born, some kind of collaborative practice.
Well, I've had some very interesting experience. Actually, I have a patient in the hospital here in Atlanta from many, many hours away today being delivered because her baby will need surgery nearby. And she could have elected to deliver at home and have the baby transported, but I think wisely, like most mothers, would choose to be where their baby was. Mm-hmm. So she came to Atlanta and will be delivered here.
So you kind of have the best of both worlds. You can extend your reach, and if they need to come to you, they can.
That's correct. And we've also had a patient, or more than one patient, where we've had, say, the pediatric cardiologist online. So there, the patient is being scanned. So there's the presenting site. I'm viewing the fetal echo. The pediatric cardiologist is viewing the fetal echo.
All at the same time.
All at the same time. We collaborate, and the patient knows the diagnosis, the plan, before she ever leaves her doctor's office, which is pretty nice because that means she doesn't have to come, say, to Atlanta 4 hours away to see me, then end up coming another time to see the pediatric cardiologist, then back to see me.
So I'm just trying to give a visual for our listeners because it sounds kind of Star Trek-y to me. But in general, you could be in front. If I'm the patient, I could see the pediatric cardiologist on the screen from Children's and talk to him.
Correct.
I could see you also at the same time. You both could see my ultrasound images, and we all three could talk to each other.
Absolutely.
All the same time.
Right. So each unit has the ability to have four images at one time, and we can do that.
Very good. So tell me, I know you're just doing some groundbreaking things. I know you've spoke at the National American Telemedicine Association on long-distance learning, on public-private partnership, how you're kind of doing these things. But in your mind, I know, as a physician first and foremost, you think of some success stories, and our listeners love to hear those. So could you think of a patient story or two where through telemedicine you were able to make a difference, save a life, save a baby, something like that?
Yes. I had a couple who had monochorionic diamnionic twins, and anytime you have that situation, there's always the potential for the blood flow from the placenta of one baby to take some of the blood flow from the other baby and grow bigger at the expense of the smaller baby. And anybody that has that situation should be appraised of it, and she was. And everything looked perfectly healthy, and we looked again 3 weeks later, and everything was not healthy. We had one baby who had no fluid around it. We had one baby who was much larger with lots of fluid. And she, without question, needed to have surgery that would...
fetal surgery.
Yes. And that is not done here in Georgia. And she would need this done so that the blood flow would be stopped. Basically, they use a laser to control the vessels and stop the blood flow from one placenta to the other that's causing this problem. And if this isn't stopped, both babies are damaged and or could be delivered early or die, as well as being damaged after they're here. So it's a very important thing to stop what is commonly called twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome.
And how many weeks gestation was this pregnancy?
This is kind of the bad part. She was 27 weeks, and many people will not do this after about 26 weeks because theoretically you could deliver the babies and help save them. However, it's much better if you can stop this, have healthier babies before you deliver. And we were able to, using long-distance learning techniques that we have developed, help the ultrasonographer in the local community be able to get the type of color flow and Doppler studies that were needed to then be transmitted to the medical center where she was going to be seen for surgery. They were impressed that it needed to be done. They were impressed with the quality. And she went immediately, within 2 days, to the medical center that would do the procedure. They saw her, elected not to wait another day, but to do it that night. She did extremely well. She was there roughly 2 days, returned home. We continued to see her twice weekly by telemedicine to make sure the babies were healthy and she was healthy. And she made it to about 34 weeks before she went into preterm labor with her twins. And both babies are healthy at home and doing well.
Well, that's pretty incredible.
Yes, it is.
That's very incredible. So you're kind of questioning if she would have maybe even come to be diagnosed with this condition if she didn't have telemedicine.
It might have been missed. It might have been missed for longer than we
the surgery limit.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then trying to get her in to be seen might have caused further problems for her or for her baby. So. Mm-hmm.
What's the most exciting thing for you about what you're doing?
Making a difference one patient at a time.
Mm-hmm. And how many patients can you see in time? Like, what kind of volume are you doing?
Well, I could certainly see more than I do, but I'm scheduled every morning, and I start, and I see patients to noon and start in the afternoon, and I see patients all afternoon.
Mm-hmm. And so you really have a very similar capacity that you do if you saw them in person.
Yes.
And you can do the you're doing consults plus teleradiology, reading the scans, just like you did in private practice.
Right. And I have the advantage of having a large screen sitting on my desk. So, you know, it's very nice for me.
Yeah. One of the things that I heard that you were doing was that in the process of bringing up the state of Georgia's first telemedicine program with the Albany State Department of Health and Dr. Fitzgerald's group, is that you're actually doing some interesting things with centering pregnancy. Can you speak about that?
Yes. Centering is a fairly recent concept in obstetrics. It was initiated by some midwives in New England who thought it would make much better sense to have topics discussed as opposed to answering the same questions for 30 patients a day. So they developed a group setting where the patients come together, they ask their questions, their topics that are discussed, and then the individual patients break out for their individual evaluations and with the midwife and then come back to a centering session. And it can be a midwife, it can be a physician, but it seems to work really well and has really helped patients be involved and be pregnant longer. So all that's been very good. Nobody had ever done maternal fetal medicine as a centering. So Dr. Jackie Grant is the obstetrician at the Albany Health Department or the Daugherty County Health Department, and we talked about doing this. So I am, and the big thing about centering is they don't bring people into the group once this group is established. Right. So I meet with the people via telemedicine at their first meeting, and then I follow up about three times during the centering sessions on different topics that would be appropriate, such as screening for one of the trisomies or diabetes or hypertension or preterm labor. And I talk to them just like I was there, and they ask me questions, and sometimes they ask questions that have absolutely nothing to do with medicine, like, do I know any celebrities? So
that's it, because you're in Atlanta. You're a big city girl, maybe.
So, you know, and I never know quite what I'm going to get asked, but overall I think it's worked really well. The patients have been really receptive, and then if they need to have an individual scan, the advantage is they know who the maternal fetal medicine provider is, and they're comfortable with seeing me.
Yeah. So while you were talking, I wrote down two things. One was, I'm guessing that with the state's program, they're thinking that if you're intervening and educating more frequently to these patients in outlier areas that you would actually make more of an impact on less preterm labor, less Medicaid costs, that kind of thing. Is that the idea?
That is the idea.
Okay. And then I thought it was really interesting that you said, you know, are you a celebrity? You had mentioned to me before, how tall are you? When you take all of the nonverbal cues out that we normally would see when a provider walks in our room, you kind of have to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I have no problems with sharing with these patients because I think it's important that they feel comfortable in a centering session that I'm part of it. And they've asked me, you know, do I have children? How old are my children? What are they doing? And that's all important things.
Yeah, it's important that they feel connected so that you're a resource for them that they'll use instead of be noncompliant.
Correct.
Yeah, that's great. So you still have to build the relationship even on telemedicine.
Absolutely. And
maybe more so.
You have to really make an effort. And I always try to ask the patients if they have questions. I try to always answer their questions. I think that's important in any doctor-physician relationship. But I try to make a special effort with telemedicine because I want them to feel as comfortable as possible, especially if we have to meet again.
Very good. Well, it's hard to believe it. We're to the end of our session already. Time flies when you're having fun. And I just want to let people know that you are one of the leaders in terms of volume of telemedicine here in Georgia and for your specialty across the nation. I don't think there's many of you.
Correct.
Very good. So we certainly appreciate you coming. And the patients and other referring physicians can find you at www.womenstelehealth.com, or you can call their office at 770-353-0746. So thank you so much for being with us today. Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you again. Thanks so much.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.